How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts this Easter Sunday. That's right, Easter Sunday. We've got a brand new show here. Last week was the biggest show of the year. WrestleMania is in the books. We're going to talk to you about all of the matches on the show. We, of course, did our program live from Fort Lauderdale last Sunday. Went on the air just moments before WrestleMania, in fact. So we'll talk about all of the matches, all of the fallout, the surprises, the big debut of Brock Lesnar on Monday night. We'll talk about where they appear to be going with storylines, and we'll talk about some matches which have been talked about for next year's WrestleMania. Of course, it is April of 2012, so talking about next year's WrestleMania is perhaps somewhat laughable, but maybe not. Obviously, Rock and Cena was planned for a year, and it went off, I would say, without a hitch. And so if they've got ideas for next year's WrestleMania, as long as they can get everybody on the same page and not screwed up over the course of the next year, maybe all of those matches will take place as scheduled. So we're going to talk about all of those, plus all of the other shows from the weekend. We talked quite a bit about Ring of Honor last week. Maybe a couple of more notes on the shows this week. Also, Raw from Monday night. We'll talk about Daniel Bryan, who was the most popular person at Raw, according to those within the company. Brock Lesnar, obviously, was super over, as was The Rock. But overall, over the course of the night, the most popular guy on the show was Daniel Bryan. Did it do him any good? Well, we shall find out. We're going to talk about that. Plus, a bunch of other news as well, including the passing of Chief Jay Strongbow. Tell you a little bit about his life and times. We'll talk about the ROH show last night. Mike Sempervivi went to Ring of Honor Live. We're going to talk to him about that program as well. Plus, TNA signs a new television extension. How long are they going to be on the air for? And Alistair Overeem did, in fact, fail a drug test. What does that mean for his future? What does that mean for the May All Heavyweight show? And what does Dana White had to say about this? Actually, we won't be able to tell you everything Dana said about it because a lot of profanity was involved. But all of these stories and more coming up on the program today here on Easter Sunday. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We're back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as we are every week. Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94, XM Radio, Channel 208, and of course streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. Last week was the biggest show of the year. It was WrestleMania. We spent quite a while previewing the event last week. Now we're going to spend probably quite a while reviewing last week's show. And Mike Sempervivi, when all was said and done, WrestleMania 28 is in the books, and was it all you expected and more?
It was certainly all I expected, I guess, and it helps that, you know, it's the one show a year, like the Super Bowl or anything else for that matter, where you get that full body buzz, and you're always excited going into it. And to me, you know, with everything that goes around it and into WrestleMania, what would happen in ring has got to be, it would have to be such a massive disappointment for WrestleMania to me to ever feel, you know, on a downswing or anything like that. So I was really happy with the show, you know, for the most part, up and down all the way through. You know, if I had my druthers, would I have changed matches or done things a little bit differently? Yeah, sure. But really, how it turned out, no complaints really whatsoever.
Well, since you brought it up, if you had to make one big change here on this show, what would you have done?
You know, this is going to kind of sound goofy because there's so many things, and WWE has so many, you know, glaring issues and things like that, but to me it would be match placement. I honestly, in hindsight, even though to move Rock and Cena away from that spot and put it at like 10 o'clock, you know, to get it out to the media and stuff like that, you could have justified it that way, but I understand it had to be the main event. But to Chris Jericho and CM Punk, and I know what they were probably thinking, which was, you know, have a spectacle sandwich, and in the middle of that have the, which should be, you know, or by all accounts was up there as far as what could steal the show. And Punk and Jericho worked so hard, but in hindsight, I gotta be honest, for them, I probably would have switched match order because they busted their ass and they had a really good match, but, you know, people just were, I mean, it took into the Rock Cena match before people seemingly recovered from The Undertaker and Triple H, so honestly, that would be the one I would actually do just for everybody involved.
So you'd have put Undertaker and Triple H in the semi-main?
I think I probably would have... I don't know what I would have filled it with. I know they had Team Johnny or something. I would have tried to structure it differently because realistically, I know Rock and Cena had to be the main event, but in hindsight, with the way that performance was and how it ended in the whole nine yards, Undertaker Triple H probably should have been the main event because nothing followed that. It really didn't.
What did you rate the Undertaker Triple H match?
I have this thing of if it's really a classic and you're going to remember it forever and you're going to show tapes of it over and over in the whole nine yards, it's a five-star classic, and it really was. I didn't think they needed Shawn Michaels. I thought it was very superfluous, and I thought it was a waste of bringing Shawn Michaels back when they announced it. You've already got the Hell in the Cell. The people have already reacted that they want to see it. You know, to bring Shawn Michaels back so soon I thought was going to be a mistake. I was wrong, and anybody that thought that was wrong, because the cage didn't play that big of an issue in the match. Shawn Michaels walking the line and who's he going to screw? That didn't play into the match, but Shawn Michaels' performance was absolutely remarkable, and it just added to the whole thing.
Shawn Michaels is great. There's a newsflash for everybody. I always remember when Shawn was, before he retired, obviously, and even actually before he got his back injury, back in the 90s, I was always blown away because it was like, okay, guy's a great wrestler, guy is a great guest referee, guy is a great cameraman at one point, guy is a great commentator. He was great at every single conceivable thing that he did, and my God, I mean, not just like the story of the match, but what a great referee. You know, sliding in down there to make the counts and the drama of the counts. He was awesome. So, you know, that aspect as well, plus the story of the match. You know, I was talking last week about how sometimes, you know, we've talked for months about this. Sometimes you got to be in the building because last year's Undertaker Triple H match, for example, I noted in the building, everybody went nuts for it, and it was an amazing match. And people watching at home, it wasn't quite so amazing. And I thought, well, you know, it's probably going to be like that again. Maybe it'll be like that for the Rock Cena match and that sort of thing. But in the case of Undertaker Triple H, because Jim Ross was down there doing commentary on the match, I would bet dollars to donuts that if I watched that match on Blu-ray, it was probably way better than the match I saw live. Because there were a lot of spots in that match that, quite frankly, as a live viewer without the aid of commentary, I didn't really know what was going on. But people sure got into that match, and it was awesome. One thing it was missing, at least to me, and this is kind of, it's not really a nitpick, I guess it kind of is, but there was not a single moment in the match where I thought that Undertaker was going to lose. And there was last year. I believe that tombstone. But this year, the best spot they did, and don't get me wrong, this spot was awesome. When Shawn gave Undertaker the super kick and he stumbled back into the pedigree and Shawn dropped down to cover, my God, that was a great spot. But did I believe for like a second that Undertaker was going to lose? No. So it was missing that aspect. But other than that, that was a really, really awesome WrestleMania match.
Well, you know what? The thing is now, though, you really got to sacrifice that because that was as good as it gets with a story with leading into it with Shawn Michaels and which side would he play and the whole nine yards and how they did it. That's what you got to have to sacrifice when it comes to an Undertaker, you know, WrestleMania match. You know, who is going to do it? I mean, yeah, he can face The Rock and Steve, but there's lots of guys, but I don't think anybody wants to see that streak end, and no one... You know, there was a second there where I kind of jumped at it, and you know, that was the spot where it was like, okay, maybe. But, you know, realistically, you know, there's no reason to end the Undertaker streak, and I hope it doesn't. And that's just going to be one of those things you have to sacrifice. Now, you know, he's going to have to try to continue the streak and to try to top this, and it's going to be tough to do it without a massive name, but it'll be interesting to see how long it goes on for. One thing I did get out of the end of the thing was, obviously, we're not going to see any of those three dudes for a long time, which I'm completely fine with.
They didn't play it up as, like, the end. They had them all hugging and carrying each other out and posing on the stage and end of an era, all that kind of thing. But I do expect Undertaker to be back next year. I don't actually expect Shawn Michaels to wrestle anytime soon. And maybe we won't even see Triple H wrestling ever again. I don't want to say he's retired or anything like that. But I think that we have seen the last of Hunter for quite a while. And next year, I guess we'll talk about later on some of the ideas for the Undertaker match and get your thoughts on those. But one last question before we move on to the next match. What was really the story of the match that Jim Ross told for that particular battle?
It was the amount of damage done and the psychology behind it. And he, without saying it, you know, twisted it into what the story was about of the end of an era, the theme of end of an era, where it was, you know, my God, you know, and Michael's trying to pull, you know, Triple H off and then vice versa. And it's how Jim Ross uses his voice, too, where it's, you know, we always, you know, he'll always be known for the, you know, by God, and that sort of, you know, the hype and getting into a match and Stone Cold, all that stuff. But it's just when he knows how to accentuate his voice and how to use pitch and how to, you know, talk you into the match and just back and up like this. And, you know, you're not used to hearing that, and you're into watching the match anyway, and it's just, you know, it's great theme music along with it. And, again, the fact that they brought him out for that match is, again, so incredibly mind-numbing that announcing matters. You know, and again, one of the unsaid things about this whole thing, as far as, you know, the end of an era, is the fact that Jim Ross did one match at WrestleMania. They brought him out for that. Next year, will they bring him out at all? And that's very problematic. And that's an end of an era that is something that, again, is a huge issue with them and is really too bad that they don't want to fix.
Yeah, the guys all requested him, and so Vince went along with it. So there you go. And are there going to be guys powerful enough next year to make that request and have it granted? I don't know. I guess if Undertaker has another match and decides he wants Jim Ross out there, I guess if you've got enough guys, maybe Steve Austin will be able to twist Vince's arm. But yep, I look forward to seeing that match. So when I do, maybe we'll talk about it more here on the show. I do not traditionally watch back the WrestleManias that I attend on DVD. But this is a match that I may, in fact, have to do that. All right, we're going to be back in just a moment with more, everybody. Wrestling Observer Live here on Easter Sunday. Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We're back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern. Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and of course streaming live worldwide on the internet at our home base, WrestlingObserver.com. Mike and I, the end of an era ourselves, two old men coughing and hacking, dying here. I had a great time in Miami, and on Monday I woke up at, I guess it'd be about, I don't know, 7 a.m. Pacific time. I was over on the East Coast, so it was about 10 a.m., and I actually enjoyed myself. I went out on the beach, and I went into the ocean, and then I hopped on an airplane, and flew 3 hours, 2 hour layover, 3 more hours. Covered in sea salt, by the way. That was something else. And I arrived home at about 10 o'clock Pacific, and immediately upon stepping off the plane, I thought, I don't feel good. And sure enough, sick. I've been sick for the last 6 days. I thought I'd be over it quickly, and it's just lingered. So it sucks. And I don't know what you got, Mike, but it sounds remarkably similar to what I got. And hopefully you've had it for a while, because if not, you're in it for the long haul there, buddy.
No, I haven't had it for too long, although I think my big problem is I have a little bit of a chest cold here. It's come running my resistance down from being on the go way too much, mixed in with the pollen count, which is, and I'm not exaggerating here, I think a million. So it's very, very painful.
What did you think about The Rock versus John Cena?
Well, you know, you know, I said, you know, that John Cena, I don't know. I started buying into what you were saying about how can they, you know, figuring out the way that they're just not going to have The Rock go over, and they're going to have John Cena go over. And, you know, I would convince myself Brock Lesnar was going to come out and do something. But, you know, cooler heads prevailed, smarter things, you know, happened, and The Rock won, which I don't know. To me, it was kind of, again, it wasn't the greatest match in the world or anything, but how it ended with Cena, you know, screwing himself and going for the people's elbow and then getting caught with the Rock Bottom. And I don't know what else. There was no other way to do that besides The Rock coming out victorious in Miami with that place. I mean, obviously, we talked about it last week. Sometimes, and you heard it on this show a little bit, because of the open air, you know, you can have a million people, and the sound is just not going to sometimes come across on TV, no matter how well you have it mic'd. When The Rock won, there was no worries about how the crowd was mic'd. They came across quite well.
I never saw so many people so happy to see a man win. I don't go to a lot of sporting events, so I'm sure that if I went to, I don't know, maybe a Super Bowl is the wrong analogy. I don't know exactly how it works if the Super Bowl's in like a... Is the Super Bowl normally in like a, I guess what was
the neutral city.
Neutral city, yes.
If you went and saw, let's say, like 100,000 seats, maybe like the University of Washington playing an arch rival, a UCLA or Washington State or something, and you're on the Washington side.
Yeah, yeah. Something like that. I mean, I as far as like wrestling events, never saw anything like this in my life. These people were so happy. And, you know, last week on the show, our previous show, I was absolutely convinced John Cena was winning. Because it had been, I mean, that had been the plan for so long that John Cena was going to go over. And about a month before the show, somebody had told me, you know, they're reconsidering John Cena going over. And that was the last I heard of it. So I figured, well, I guess they probably are back to their original plan. And I watched Raw, and, you know, John Cena is practically bragging that he's going to win on Sunday. And it's like, well, you know, unless they turn this fool heel, you know, you have a babyface bragging and guaranteeing he's going to win, and then he doesn't win. And sure enough, he lost. And my God, going in, as you noted, I was like, I don't know how you beat The Rock in Miami. I just don't get it. How do you do it? I mean, you've got to come up with something outrageous to do this. And when it was over and The Rock had won, I was leaving, walking through the parking lot, looking at everybody so happy and hugging and laughing and having the time of their lives. And it was like, you know, I'm even more baffled right now how they thought, even for a moment, that they could pull this off. I don't know. Maybe, I don't know what happened. Maybe when they were doing television and they were trying so hard to get John Cena a 50-50 reaction, it failed so miserably that they just went, you know, we can't do this. It ain't going to work. I don't know what happened. All I know is the right man won in this city on this day. And where that goes in the future, I don't know. Does it affect John Cena? Is his character doomed? Is he no longer going to be a merchandise seller? I don't think any of that's true. But it was something else. Now, the match itself, I gave it 2 3/4 stars. And a lot of people were appalled. Like, oh my God, it was much better than that, Brian. And I think Dave gave it an extra full star. To me, it was just like, I don't know. It's exactly what I expected. Rock is 39. He hasn't had a singles match that went 30 minutes, probably in more than a decade. He was facing John Cena, who John Cena can have good matches with the right opponent, but he's also really not very good in the ring. He's not a very good mechanic. He's clunky. And Rock got tired, very tired. And as noted, they went 30 minutes. And I didn't expect any better. I didn't expect any worse. I thought it was fine. But I really didn't think it was anything more than that. And yes, I guess if you want to add in the insane crowd reactions, then it was better than I rated it. But just as a match itself, it was fine, I thought.
That's what, yeah, I mean, I'll give it a little bit more credit and say 3 stars, good. It was good. It delivered what it had to do, and the extra spectacle around it. I mean, I guess if you wanted to hang a little bit more on there, you know, that's cool and everything. But, you know, I wonder if one of the things, too, with maybe what changed from what you heard was just getting something binding enough with The Rock where, you know, yes, he said it at the WrestleMania press conference, he was going to be, you know, up at the new Meadowlands for next year's WrestleMania. But, you know, it was trying to secure him in, and then obviously his promo on Monday night, where he came out and said, you know, yes, I'm back, I'm going away, but I'm really still going to be here, and you know what, I want to be WWE champion again. You know, that obviously is a, you know, set the tone for something else, you know, as well. So, you know, as far as John Cena goes, this should be a blessing for him. It really, really should. There's no way. It's so incredibly moronic to me to turn him heel with the amount of kids that love him, the amount of merchandise he moves, the women, the whole nine yards there. And again, him to me is a quick fix where all you got to do is make him serious and show some vulnerability and stop with the goofy smiling and stuff like that, which he did in the main event at WrestleMania 2, which was annoying. And I know that's his shtick, but it's part of his shtick that drives people bonkers. And, you know, one thing that's been shown the last two nights, or on Sunday and Monday, where he is vulnerable. So there's ways they can go with this where he does not have to be a heel, okay? You can have more than one big good guy. He can still be the merchandise mover. As long as he's just taken care of in a way where he gets some vulnerability shown, he gets to expand his character more, he's not so boxed in, and he's a guy that you don't mind watching, you know, punch other people in the face, and that's the biggest thing with John Cena. Turning him heel just because people boo him, that's a dumb thing to do, I think. But yeah, I think he'll be more than fine coming out of this.
Yeah, I think if the idea was ever to turn John Cena heel, I mean, you got to remember, over a year ago, when they did the deal where if John Cena loses this match, he must join the Nexus. And that would have been their opportunity to test the waters of John Cena as a heel. And what did they do? Didn't even last one day. You know, and
they couldn't even test the heels with him in an alternate selling merchandise with that Juan Cena mask. They couldn't even do that.
Yeah. And here, it's like, okay, you know, if they were really going to turn him heel, if the idea was he's going to turn heel, then there's no reason to spend all this time watering down the Rock to try to get John Cena a 50-50 reaction at WrestleMania. You know, if they were going to turn John Cena heel, and they would have just let Rock go all out, and you would have turned John Cena during the build. They didn't do it. They wanted to make sure that he still got cheered. So, to me, there's not going to be a John Cena heel turn anytime soon. Of course, you know, Vince may wake up tomorrow and just go, yeah, we're gonna turn this guy heel. But I would guess that don't hold your breath, I guess is the best way to put it. Then we had the CM Punk Chris Jericho match for the title, which ended up being a very good match. First 15 minutes or so, slow going. I was not blown away by this match for the first half of it, but last 6-7 minutes, it really picked up. Last few minutes of it actually were awesome, and Punk ended up getting the win with his Anaconda Vice. And a fine performance from both guys, setting up a rematch, I believe, at Extreme Rules coming up later this month.
Now, you're a professional journalist, so you would never let your emotion ever color or get in the way of covering a situation. But, honestly, when it got right down to it, you and for everybody else there, was there a massive come down after under? Do you think that's what it was, or do you just think something wasn't clicking? Because on TV, you know, I thought they were having a good match, and obviously it ramped up when they needed it to at the end, which was going to happen anyway. But I thought they were having a pretty good match. Did people just not take it that way there?
I don't really know, to be honest with you. I mean, Undertaker Triple H was followed by the 12-man tag. And, I mean, nobody cared at all about Team Johnny versus Team Teddy. No one cared. I mean, absolutely nobody. When Santino finally got in at the end, he got, like, a moderate reaction. But, again, nobody really cared. So you had a real big buffer between the two matches. And I would say that it was the result of the Undertaker-Triple H match, if not for the fact that the last 8 minutes of this match, the people totally got into it. I just kind of think that CM Punk and Chris Jericho trying to do like a professional wrestling match with a bunch of holds, 7 matches into the show, was not what these people wanted to see.
And you know what else, too? I think psychology played into that, too, with how this thing was built up.
In the sense of, actually, we're going to head to a break, so hold that thought. And when we come back, we'll talk more about CM Punk versus Chris Jericho and all of the other matches on the show, including the 18-second world title match with Daniel Bryan. Coming up in just a moment on this Easter Sunday, Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, for the latest news and information in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. You can always head to our home base, WrestlingObserver.com. We have daily news updates. We have videos, TV reviews, news updates, interviews, everything you could ever want pertaining to pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, plus radio shows. I've said it a million times. If you love this show and you only get to listen to it once per week, you are missing out. We do shows every single day at WrestlingObserver.com, including tonight, Easter Sunday. Dave Meltzer and I are going to be back later on tonight. A brand new radio show talking all of the news and pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, taking your email questions and more. Back again after Raw tomorrow night. And got a lot of big shows coming up this week, including Gabe Sapolsky on the show on Tuesday, talking the Dragon Gate USA shows from this past weekend and all of the news from DG, USA, and Evolve. And a sampling is available at WrestlingObserver.com. Scroll down the right-hand side of the page. It is a listing of our latest three free radio... I think maybe four up there right now. Free radio shows, regardless. They are MP3s. Download them. Check them out. These are not your average podcasts. The audio quality is exactly the same as what you're listening to right now. In fact, probably better, quite frankly. So head up there and check it out. If you like what you hear, keep in mind, not only do you get every single show that we do on a daily basis, sometimes as many as 15 shows in a week, but every show that we have ever done is available in our archives dating back to 2005. Not just shows involving myself. We have a number of great shows up there, including the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare, which is hosted by Mike Sempervivi here on the line and his buddy Adam Summers. We have shows covering pro wrestling, mixed martial arts, the history of wrestling, the history of MMA, and some shows that just have nothing to do with anything. They're all up there right now available for you. You can download them. You can have them automatically synced to your iTunes every morning. So when you get up to go to work, there are brand new shows on your iPod, iPad, iPhone, whatever you listen to your audio on. So check it out, WrestlingObserver.com, your home for wrestling audio. Don't sit there and only listen to one show a week. You need to be listening to these shows every single day. I've guaranteed it many times. If you love this show, I guarantee you'll love a subscription, and you won't regret it. So check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. We are here talking the biggest show of the year, last year's WrestleMania, or last week's WrestleMania. And we are talking CM Punk and Chris Jericho. And before the break, Mike was talking about the crowd reactions for the first half of that battle. And Mike, you came to the conclusion that perhaps there was some psychology involved with the crowd not getting into this match.
Well, you know, you think about the build and the emotion about some of the other matches behind it, and it's like, I'm not saying that Kane and Randy Orton was the worst situation, but just coming up with something to have an excuse to have them, you know, to have a match at WrestleMania, and instead of being the culmination of something, it was just something that happened, and that's obviously leading towards something else down the line. You know, I don't think that was the case here, where people were thinking, well, okay, Jericho Punk, and it's not, you know, it's going to continue on after this, and this is just the start of something. I think more than that was the fact that what was built into it, they came up with a story about, you know, Jericho calling out Punk's dad and Punk's mom and Punk's sister and getting at him that way. And it's not that it wasn't well acted or anything like that, but it did seem very forced. And it was one of those things where when Jericho first dropped it, it's like, okay, so what do you do after this? Is this going to be a nugget of information that stays in a heel's mind when he goes up against Punk? It kind of came out of nowhere. I don't really necessarily think he needed to go that direction with starting something, but it was an excuse to do it, and I don't think, as much as people like Jericho Punk, and especially the diehards that would listen to this show or anything like that, I mean, it didn't make them want to see the match more. They wanted to see it anyway. I think for the WrestleMania fan and for the casual Raw viewer in the transient out there, I don't think there was enough to where they bought into it to latch him in, and it just was kind of flat that way too. And I don't think that helped. You know, when you're having a match, it's for a title, but it's built on the back of that and kind of overshadowing the title. You know, they probably should have just presented it as, we're going to try to go steal WrestleMania. You know, I'm the best in the world. You say you ripped everything off from me. We're going to go at it, and we're going to be, call it, we're going to be Flair Steamboat. We're going to be Steamboat Savage. We're going to be whatever it is. But that's how we're going to go and approach this. I think doing it the other way with creating the story, it just didn't work, and it just didn't help matters.
I do think it was, I hate to even use this comparison because it's certainly not fair to Punk and Jericho. But when you talk about all of the buildup that they did for this, you know, you're talking about all these terrible things that Jericho said about Punk and his family. And then they're in there doing holds, headlock takeovers and the like. Yeah. And it wasn't quite as bad, but I'll never forget, like, years back at WrestleMania when they did Triple H versus Randy Orton. And they built this up, and, you know, Hunter, like, attacked Orton at his house or something like that, and his wife is there.
Oh, yeah, that was one of the cornball things where they didn't even need to do it, but they came up with that. He's going to throw him out the front window of his house, and then, yeah, they lock up.
Yeah, all this, yeah, they locked up to open this match. It's like, really, you locked up? You know, this guy broke into your house and scared the crap out of your wife, and now you're gonna do a collar and elbow tie-up to start this match? It's the stupidest thing I ever saw. Nobody cared about the match, and the match sucked. I do remember that. This was not like that. But at the same time, it's like you said, you know, if you want to do your WrestleMania classic wrestling match, then that's what it should be built upon. It shouldn't be like a some sort of grudge blood battle, and then you're in there trying to have a classic grappling match. It doesn't make sense. And I think that's what the match was early, and what really turned it around was when they started going for the moves everybody knew. You know, they started going for the Anaconda Vice or the walls or everything like that. That's when everybody came alive, like, oh, I know that move! I just think it was maybe wrong match placement, maybe wrong style of match based on the field. I don't know what it was, but the people didn't care for the first half of it. And like I said, turned into a great match. I take nothing away from the guys. But the psychology of it, I guess, like you said, probably it could have been better. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, and I don't know where, you know, and again, I would have moved it. I don't know where I would have moved it on the card. Probably, you know what, and honestly, I probably would have put it second under the circumstances, or maybe even third. You would have the excuse to with how the world title match turned out. But yeah, I think, and again, too, I think the burnout of it really played a part into it as far as the Undertaker effect.
And then we add the Kane-Randy Orton match. We don't really need to talk too much. Big Show beat Cody Rhodes, and Kelly and Maria beat Beth Phoenix and Eve, and Team Johnny beat Team Teddy. Unless you have anything profound to say about any of these matches, I don't think there's much to say about them.
No, I sent a tweet out watching the 12-man. It was just like, you know, Alberto Del Rio, we talked about it last week. Basically, Vince says he doesn't want him in the match. Hold off till Raw because I don't want you in there with all those geeks. Then you look at the talent level, and you're looking at Kofi Kingston, and whether you like these guys or not, you know, somebody out there does, so throw them all in the mix. Kofi Kingston, Jack Swagger, The Miz, Dolph Ziggler, Drew McIntyre. They're the geeks, and it's kind of a scary thought. That's all I got to really say about that.
So that leads us to the Kane-Randy Orton match, which I believe this was your annual WrestleMania match where everybody knew who was going to win, and so they switched the finish. And, of course, they had their rematch on SmackDown. Randy Orton won. The feud is apparently over. And I add to my belief that they switched the finish to the fact that Randy Orton didn't care about this match at all. He could not possibly have cared less. Actually, he could have. He could have not shown up. But other than that, he could not possibly have cared less. He went in there. He went through the motions. They had a match. He lost. He moved on with his life. And that being to SmackDown, where he finally got his big win, and now he can move on. This match did absolutely nothing for me.
Yeah, it was just in the, you know, I agree with you. Either that or they had it planned this way. It was just like, okay, well, we'll do something afterwards to give ourselves a little bit of a buffer with thinking about, you know, the Monday shows, you know, not only the one that took place Monday night, but for the one coming up this Monday, where it was just like, it was easy to just go, okay, he wins, you win here, you know, collect the money, boom, done, gone. And, yeah, it was a match to fill the card. And again, I know some people will probably be upset about that, but it's fine. Kane deserves a WrestleMania payoff, you know, at least quarterly for some of the stuff that they have him do and the fact that he has survived for this long.
That leads us to Daniel Bryan and Sheamus. Apparently, they decided.
I heard about this match.
Yeah. Apparently what they decided was, we want to set the record for the shortest world title match at WrestleMania. And they decided of all the possible guys to do this with, well, let's do it this year with Daniel Bryan, who could actually have an awesome match with Sheamus. A lot of people in WWE were trying to get this finish changed, or at least get the length changed. Didn't happen. So, sure enough, Sheamus broke kick 18 seconds. That's the end of Daniel Bryan. That's the end of the Daniel Bryan match at WrestleMania. A lot of people infuriated. Funny thing is that, I guess if you consider the ECW title a world title, they still didn't break the record. Because The Big Show and Chavo Guerrero had an 8-second WrestleMania title match many years ago. And when I first heard, I think it was, I forget what it was, but I was told that, like, you know, they want to beat the Big Show Chavo world title. And I was like, hold on a second. Chavo Guerrero was in a world title match at WrestleMania? That's impossible. Turns out it was for the ECW title. So I don't actually think that really counts. They're calling this a record in WWE. So I presume the World Heavyweight Championship title match record at WrestleMania is now held by Daniel Bryan and Sheamus at 18 seconds. And what were your thoughts when this match quickly ended?
It was so abrupt that, honestly, the first thing I did was actually bust out laughing, and all these thoughts ran through my mind instantly of what was WWE thinking, what are fans thinking, I mean, the whole gamut, because if they were just going to do this anyway, you know, to do it to the guy they did it to, you knew was going to elicit all the reaction that it has. But when you stop and you think about what the character was, realistically, he's been banana peeling it the whole time on the way into it. I'm not shocked by this. And, look, if he wrestles 10, 15 minutes, he's going to, obviously, he can carry Sheamus, have a great match with him. They need Sheamus to be a big superstar, and he gets a reaction that's getting close to a bigger level. With that said, I would rather have this, and then Bryan and him continue to have matches for a while, you know, leading into the next pay-per-view or something like that, or you can drop some of the goofiness with Daniel Bryan and have him being so angry and upset that he just goes out and chokes people out and cattle mutilates people in the whole nine yards. So I think with the character that the champion was, it made a lot of sense to do. With that said, with the guy, you know, who was happened to be holding the title at that time, obviously he was going to get this kind of reaction. But with how everything turned out, it may be the best thing that happened to him.
Well, that does bring us to Raw and the chants that rang through Raw all night long. And I guess everyone's probably aware of this since you listened to last week's show. The fans doing the yes, yes, yes chant, that did not start on Raw or WrestleMania. That started on Friday. Actually, you know what? That started in Seattle about a month and a half back when I went to a SmackDown taping. And it was the most amazing thing I ever saw because Daniel Bryan is from Aberdeen, which is about an hour and a half south of Seattle, out in the middle of nowhere. Grew up in Aberdeen. And, of course, he's coming home to the Seattle area, to the Aberdeen area. So he's doing the SmackDown taping in Seattle, and, of course, everybody knows he's from the area, so they're all cheering for Daniel Bryan. And I guess to make sure that they didn't cheer him for his SmackDown main event, forget who was with, but he came out and he did a big promo about how he's from Aberdeen. Everyone goes, yay! And then he goes, as soon as I could, I got out of there and went to Texas to train with Shawn Michaels. Everyone goes, boo! So he comes out and he does his main event, his TV match, and everybody boos him like a nice crowd does. And then he immediately comes out for a dark match, and they chanted, yes, for every kick that he threw. We're going to talk a little bit more about this after the break. The Rise of Daniel Bryan, Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Bryan Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Before the break, talking about the beginning of the yes chance for Daniel Bryan. I first heard him about a month ago, SmackDown tapings in Seattle. Funniest part was, Daniel Bryan was booed. He was hated during the actual TV portion of the show, but he immediately came out for a dark match with The Big Show, by the way. This was like seconds after the TV main event ended, and the fans who had been booing him during the TV portion immediately started cheering him for the dark match. I guess they realized this is not televised. Now we can like the guy. A very kind crowd playing along with WWE. Anyway, in the dark match, every time he threw a kick at the Big Show, the people would go, yay! And every time the Big Show would hit Daniel Bryan, they would go, boo! And so that was the first time I heard the yes. You know, he'd throw a kick, they'd go, yes! And Big Show would hit him, they go, no! And he'd throw a kick, and they go, yes! So anyway, that's the first time I heard the yes chants. So fast forward to WrestleMania weekend. All night long at Ring of Honor, the fans were chanting yes. All night long at Dragon Gate USA, the fans were chanting yes! And then, of course, at WrestleMania, after he was beaten in 18 seconds, there were chants for Daniel Bryan all night long, and yes chants and the like. This continued on Raw. I was told from somebody in WWE that the most popular guy at Raw was Daniel Bryan. Now, keep in mind, The Rock was there, and he was super over, and Brock Lesnar returned, and the place went nuts. But from the beginning of the show to the end, the guy that the people wanted to see more than anyone else, including in the dark match at the end of the show, was Daniel Bryan. And the yes chants continued on SmackDown until he cut a promo on AJ and dumped her and yelled at the people. And WWE firmly believes that there will not be any more yes chants starting tomorrow night in Washington, D.C. I think that they are completely out of their minds. So we're going to talk about Daniel Bryan. We'll talk about Raw and SmackDown when we come back from our top of the hour break. Talk about the return of Brock Lesnar. And talk about some matches for next year's Mania. Here on Easter Sunday, Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Joined as we are every week by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare at WrestlingObserver.com. Here talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts every Sunday afternoon, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. Mike, have you ever seen such an epic dumping as that of Daniel Bryan and AJ on SmackDown this week?
It's such a sad situation there, but, you know, I'm just not going to cry for Daniel Bryan. Adam Summers asked me on the last Adam Mike Big Audio Nightmare, which is up on the site, would you rather be Okada after January 4th and he won the IWGP title, or would you rather be Daniel Bryan after WrestleMania? I say Daniel Bryan around June 1st or whenever he is, he gets that WrestleMania check. For those out there that are upset that this could turn into a Zack Ryder situation where they would make fun of the fact that he says yes, 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 and he just become a catchphrase in an entrance, that's not going to be the case with Daniel Bryan. He's too good. They know he's too valuable, and you don't have to worry about that. And again, I know 18 seconds was bad, and now he's lost his woman in his fit of rage, and he's gotten rid of her. But something tells me Daniel Bryan will end up being okay, and hopefully just Eve doesn't come around SmackDown.
I was going to say, what woman do you put him with now?
You know what? I don't know. They have plenty of them on the roster. You know what? Perfect. Layla. Layla's coming back. Mm. Everyone loves Layla. I love Layla. Do you love Layla?
Not as big a fan as some people, but
I love Layla, and Daniel Bryan will love Layla. Fine combination.
Mm. Daniel Bryan is actually seeing one of the Bellas, which was fascinating because a couple weeks ago, you actually had Daniel Bryan's fake girlfriend against Daniel Bryan's real girlfriend, with Daniel Bryan having to cheer on his fake girlfriend. How wacky.
Well, hopefully that one Bella in question broke him of his veganism.
I think the one Bella in question is actually the better worker of the two, so he chose wisely. All right, we're going to head to a break, everybody. We'll be back in just a moment talking more WrestleMania fallout. WrestleMania, Wrestling Observer, Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts every Sunday afternoon, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the old internet at WrestlingObserver.com. And, Mike, the WrestleMania fallout continued on Raw when, in the main event, we saw the return of Brock Lesnar, former WWE champion, former UFC heavyweight champion. John Cena was in the ring, and John Cena was trying to do, I guess, a concession speech. I don't know, because the people were busy not listening to him. chanting yes and Daniel Bryan and whatever else they wanted. Actually, we want Brock as well. These people knew. And who should come out but Brock Lesnar? And he gave John Cena the F5 and he left him laying. And that was the end of the show. He returns on Raw tomorrow night. And what were your thoughts on the return of the next big thing?
You know, the kicking of the hat, I think everybody can appreciate that as a nice little bow on top. But no, it was a great way to end it. It was to me too much overkill on Monday with the fact that they debuted so much and they had so much going on where, you know, to me it was a little bit too much and Tensai got lost in the mix especially. But, you know, Brock Lesnar ending that, they could not have ended the show any better. And obviously sparked a lot of interest, and he's still big, he's still huge, he's still scary. And even though he's not as remarkably cut as he once was, he doesn't have to be. He just stands out as he is. So him coming out, and again, it's great, too, because, you know, for everybody that's into it and thinking about them announcing something for next year, and you got Cena and Rock, and that was looking like the possibility of doing that again, and, you know, there were different names in the mix. You know, the possibility of Brock and Rock, in New York next year would be pretty huge as well. So just have to see where they go with that. Hopefully they don't announce anything. I can live without them trying to build something up for a year. You know, 6 months I think would be perfectly fine if they wanted to start it after SummerSlam or the Survivor Series or something like that. But, you know, obviously Brock coming back is a big, big deal, even though he won't be around that much or wrestling that much. You know, less is more with him anyway. I think it proved itself with The Rock a little bit. You know, the Survivor Series tag match was so painfully superfluous and didn't benefit anyone. I don't think they're going to do that with Brock, even though he'll be wrestling more matches. But, you know, the fact that he's back, they need that star power, and it gets, you know, some crossover looks at least. At least it's an attempt to do so. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see where it goes.
Do you think that Brock being destroyed in his last UFC fight is going to hurt him one bit with these fans?
Nope. Unless they want to bring it up and beat it to death, which he wouldn't let happen anyway because it would be moronic for his character. You know, it wouldn't make any sense. Look, everybody knows he can whip ass. And the thing is, you know, people are smart enough to know, too, just because you get your ass kicked by one guy doesn't mean everybody can do it. No one's thinking that John Cena can kick Brock's ass. No one's thinking a lot of people can. So it's still incredibly, incredibly effective to have Brock Lesnar walking around looking like Brock.
Do you think...
Now, if they sign Cain Velasquez, it's different.
How about Alistair Overeem? No. Do you think that...
Oh, I miss Pride.
In what sense?
Pride and K1, just because, you know, from a sporting point of view, it was pure ludicrous, and I thought someone was going to get killed. But for just bringing up hypotheticals like this, you know, could you imagine Alistair Overeem against Brock Lesnar in IGF for Inoki or something like that?
He'd sure. Do you think that WWE will ever a single time use the words UFC or Ultimate Fighting in regards to Brock Lesnar?
I think they will strategically do it when it comes to some media things because they're not going to have a way to get out of it. I think they'll do it that way. I think if it comes out on air, it's got to be either strategic or it'll be a mistake. But they will go, they're going to go so far out of their way to not mention it for God knows what reason. And obviously there are plenty of reasons, not all of them good ones from their side, where, you know, they're going to do that. It's a ludicrous thing, but they're going to really go out of the way to not do it, I think.
Do you think that they should?
I don't. In a way, I don't blame them. I think if you just get it out of the way early, you don't have to beat it to death where every time he walks out, you say, here's former UFC heavyweight champion, much less saying pay-per-view king Brock Lesnar. They don't have to say that, but if you say, look, he's back from the UFC or something, get it out of the way early and then continue to refer to him as a former, you know, the last undisputed world heavyweight champion and things like that, which I think also down the line could be a real realistic possibility for him is actually reunifying the titles again because you have all the reason in the world to do it now, especially because he is working limited dates and he's going to need to go through top guys in good ways. I can actually see that conceivably happening before next year's WrestleMania. But, you know, they are in direct competition when it comes, not in direct competition, but there's that mentality. They're in direct competition when it comes to pay-per-views every month, let alone on the same weekend and things like that. So, and again, it's a different business. So if I'm WWE, I don't go out of my way to do it. But at the same time, get it out of the way early and don't look so, you know, like you're basically trying to avoid saying it, which is what they kind of look like already off the bat.
Now, John Cena lost to The Rock, and Brock Lesnar attacked John Cena on Raw, and one would suspect that Brock's first big match would be against John Cena. But to me, it makes zero sense for Brock Lesnar to lose in his first big feud. So, would you expect Brock to beat John Cena again? That's two straight losses against big stars of John Cena. Are they going somewhere with this, do you think?
I hope they do. I don't know if they will. They've never proven that they will. But I do hope that happens, because it's not going to kill John Cena if he doesn't, if he loses matches. It's not going to kill him, you know, to be the, not be the Superman all the time. And again, they can play, like we were talking about at the beginning of the show, it puts a different dynamic into his character, and it's one that's absolutely needed. So, you know, they can't do this. We talked about it with Juan Cena. They don't want him to go away for any extended period of time. But with Brock back and Randy Orton, you know, could use, you know, a little more boost up, and Alberto, they have enough going on where Cena really should go away for a little while, even though that won't happen. He should at least be downplayed. Play to his strengths and create a great story for him. But you don't have to feature him so much. And him losing a second match in a row, it shouldn't matter. It really shouldn't matter, and I don't think realistically it will matter, as long as he's got something behind it where people are gravitating towards him and his story. It doesn't matter that he's losing some matches, as long as they're into him and into where they may be going.
Now, next year, WrestleMania is coming, and three big matches have been suggested. Working towards next year. And the first, obviously, is Steve Austin and CM Punk. That's no surprise. They've been going back and forth on Twitter, and they both seem open to doing the match. I suppose we should talk about that one first. I figured when Steve Austin came back, it would be for a main event match at a show in Texas. That ain't happening. Guy's 48 years old. I shouldn't say it's not happening, but I guess it could still happen. But 48 years old, and the time is now if he's going to do one more match. Punk wants to match. He's open to a match with Punk. It would be taking place in the New York market. It probably would not be the final match on the show. Is this worth it for Steve Austin to do this match?
Yeah. If he can't wait for Texas, or whether to announce the next WrestleMania after that, you know, and again, even in 2 years, and we may have talked about it last week, where I think you brought up Undertaker, and how will the bodies even be in 2 years? So if you're going to pull the trigger, do it now, and have somebody who can take care of you, who you know is not going to drop you on your neck to the point where you're going to be paralyzed for life. CM Punk can do that. Chris Jericho can do that. You know, I would love to see Austin Undertaker in Texas 2 years from now in front of 100,000 people, but if he can't do that, put him in there with somebody like a Punk or a Jericho or somebody that's really going to accentuate all positives and get the most out of the match, doing the least damage to Steve Austin.
So that is the first of those matches. And the second match we're going to talk about when we come back from the break is the possibility of The Undertaker putting the streak on the line against, of all people, John Cena. We'll talk about that when we come back from the break. Wrestling Observer Live here on Easter Sunday, Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next 40 minutes, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. Every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, including this Sunday, Easter Sunday. We're talking about potential matches for next year's WrestleMania. One of them that has been under consideration is a Undertaker versus John Cena match. Putting the streak on the line against, I guess, in storyline, the guy who has something to prove at WrestleMania after losing to The Rock this year. I don't know if that's enough of a storyline to convince people that the streak might end, But what are your thoughts on John Cena versus The Undertaker in a streak match at WrestleMania this coming year in the New York market?
Nobody's going to buy it. I just honestly don't think anybody's going to buy it. Do you want John Cena losing two straight WrestleMania matches? I don't know. And the thing is, you go Undertaker Brock is a natural thing if you wanted to go that direction. But again, you can put Undertaker in there with anybody. I mean, to me, that's a more believable way to try to break the streak. If it's Rock or Brock Lesnar, that's more believable than putting John Cena in there. And again, you're depending on what you do with the John Cena character. If you keep it the same exact way and continue on the way it is, sure, I guess go ahead and do it because he's going to beat him. Nobody's going to care. Undertaker's going to get all the reaction anyway. So it's just, to me, I just wouldn't do that. I don't know who you put The Undertaker in there against, you know, because, again, for me, it would either be Brock or Rock because you can at least get something out of the believability of that. Shawn Michaels, I guess, could be a thing if he wanted to come back, but you've already done that, and again, it's been 4 years of basically some sort of Shawn Michaels involvement when it's come to The Undertaker and the WrestleManias, and not that I wouldn't want to see it again, but they got to do, I would say, something else. So I'm not really feeling seeing Undertaker next year. I really am. I'm just really not.
Now, listen.
Now, Randy Orton, on the other hand, if Randy Orton has a monster year and he's back to legend killing and he is a believable, you know, psychopath, I think you can do it that way, but I think we already got that. I don't know when it was. I think that may have been 5 years ago.
You have to be very careful how you build this up, because I hated that stuff in WCW where it was like, oh, Kevin Nash is going against the script. They actually said that on a WCW program once about 12 years ago, or 10 years ago, shortly before the company went out of business. 12 years ago, actually. Anyway, how time flies. Listen, I don't think you can convince a single person on the face of the earth that The Rock could end the streak. Because Rock's gimmick is that he puts over everybody. It's been like that forever, you know? I don't think you can convince people there's a logical reason why Rock would need to beat Undertaker, or why Undertaker would need or want to lose to Rock. So I don't think that one I don't think that's going to work as a streak match.
That one, at least you get, even though people wouldn't believe it, you get the spectacle of those two dudes doing it.
It'd be a big match, a lot more than, say,
he and Cena.
It'd be a big match, sure. But I don't think you'd convince anybody that the streak might end. Now, with Brock, and I don't know how you would do this, and maybe you just wouldn't even try, you would just hope that people would think it. But with Brock Lesnar, I think you'd have a subset of your audience that would think, these guys really don't like each other. I remember that YouTube video where they went face-to-face. You know, maybe, just maybe, Brock Lesnar will just take the streak because he can. Maybe you could convince a subset of the population that there's a possibility of that happening. But I really don't even know if there's a match that even exists nowadays that you can honestly convince people that Undertaker is going to lose. The streak is going to end. And maybe I'm wrong, because, you know, like I said, when I was at WrestleMania this year, I did not buy a single near fall in that Undertaker match. I did not believe for one moment that the streak was going to end. However, when Undertaker ate the super kick and the pedigree, the reaction to him kicking out was outrageous. 95% of the building, actually, I should say like 99.9%. I was sitting next to my buddy Vinny, who absolutely didn't care at all. But other than that, people went nuts for that near fall. So maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong, and in fact, every year there is a huge number of people that do in fact think that Undertaker might lose, that the streak might end. And maybe I'm one of the only jaded, bitter ones who doesn't believe it. But if you're trying to sell WrestleMania on the idea that maybe if you pay your money you're gonna see the end of the streak, I don't know if there's anybody left that you can honest to God convince the people that that's the guy that's gonna end the streak.
It's again, damn near impossible, and Brock is one of the only ones you could do it with. So, you know, in lieu of that, and again, Brock Undertaker for the Undertaker, it's got to be a physical thing. you know, with Brock, and again, I don't know if that's the best for Undertaker, his body, or his future, or anything like that, of even doing these things once a year. But with that said, so you, in lieu of that, you go with the spectacle, and what's going to at least give you the biggest spectacle if he comes back next year, which, as long as he can do it, I'm all for it.
And the last big match talked about is Brock Lesnar versus The Rock as the big main event of WrestleMania. Rock has talked openly about being willing to do this match, and Brock likes The Rock. So that's, obviously they're both into the idea of this match. And if done, well, I guess the first question I should ask is, Mike, if you're in charge and Vince goes, I want this main event next year, Rock versus Brock Lesnar, what do you do as far as building this up? And do you think, just off the top of your head right now, based on different things, do you think that match ends up being the biggest WrestleMania match of all time?
Yeah, actually, you know, pay-per-view buy-wise, it probably will be. Because of the way cable's expanded in pay-per-view and people have more, you know, shots at it than ever, it's going to be interesting what this number is this year. But, yeah, I mean, it really can be, especially if you do it for a unified title or something like that. That's, to me, a slam dunk success. And if you're not going to use those two guys in other forms with other guys on the show and you're dead set on doing that, yeah, it's going to be a monster. Even if they screw it up, which is, you know, possible for them to do, it doesn't really matter. The fans with them in the ring and the fans in New York and the New York metro area are going to take to that so much that, it, to me, that's an absolute slam dunk.
It would be your by far biggest pro wrestling draw against your by far biggest mixed martial arts draw. That could be a big show. I should note, by the way, that we do not have numbers, but the early indications are that this year's WrestleMania did pretty much exactly what we were all expecting. Right around 1.1 million, somewhere around there. It didn't hit 1.3. Even WWE, the week of the show, had downgraded it to 1 million. And I actually think it did better than what they were expecting on the final week of the show. But for those of you that saw the tweet by the ESPN writer who claimed 1.9 million buys, that's preposterous. Didn't even come close to that. But like I said, we don't have numbers, but it's going to end up pretty much exactly what we expected it was going to end up. So next year's show, I mean, if you did have Brock Lesnar versus The Rock and you figured out a way to build it up properly, I think 1.25 million or maybe even 1.3 would be a conceivable number.
Oh, my God, yeah. I think with the star power, everything else going into it, the fact that it's in the New York market and they're going to be able to crank it up and lay it on thick everywhere and having names like, you know, the possibility of Jericho back, but Undertaker, Brock, Rock, Cena, Triple H, with all those people playing into the mix, yeah, I think it could easily be their biggest one. Now, if you're WWE, I wonder if anybody goes, hey, wait, these two guys aren't long-term solutions for our company. In fact, last year at this time, they weren't even, you know, truly company guys. I wonder if that plays an effect on anything, which, you know, if you think about it from the promotional standpoint, it's just ludicrous. You see this with real fights. You see it in other places. You saw it way back in the day where promoters would bring in two guys out of their territory to pop something big because they know it's a big feud, say Superstar and Dusty in New York, and they come to Mid-South to have a bull rope match. I mean, the fact that you can have that and make money off of it, that would be my only goal and intention, but they don't sometimes think of things that way, and I wonder if that plays a part because obviously, The Rock can't be committed forever. He's got that deal. But it's never going to be ironclad where he's going to be back every week. And you know, certainly that's not the same way with Brock Lesnar as well, who, after next year's WrestleMania, there's no guarantee he's going to be around anyway. Hell, there's no guarantee he gets there in the first place, although I can't look at things at doomsday or anything like that.
Yeah, the Brock Lesnar contract appears to be for 1 year through next year's WrestleMania. And Rock has agreed to next year's WrestleMania, but you know, who knows, as you noted, what his movie schedule is going to be for 2013, so that may be his only date. So conceivably, you could have two guys who aren't staying in the main event of your WrestleMania. In hindsight, I shouldn't say in hindsight, with foresight, perhaps the fact that neither guy is staying would result in them not putting that match on last or building the entire show around it. I think that would be a mistake. If you're going to do the match, then you got to do the match, and you got to push it as the biggest match of all time, even if both guys may not be around afterwards. It's not like Brock is going to go back to UFC. It's not like Brock is going to go to TNA. If Brock signs his one-year deal, does his deal, and then gets out, he ain't going anywhere else, so it doesn't matter. And it's not like Rock is going anywhere else either. So I think if you're going to do the match, you got to build it up as the great match in wrestling history. It's going to go on last, and you may never see both men again.
And it's not rocket science or brain surgery. It's very simple. Brock loses title or loses that night, he doesn't have to come back. Rock comes out on Monday night, gives a speech, everything's hunky-dory. Well, maybe in that year you're building up a guy like a Wade Barrett who could be a monster, and he goes and on Rock's goodbye lays waste to him, and people go, oh, man. And then you start all over again fresh with a guy who is going to be there. It's just you can't. They have not given you faith that they have the ability to do that anymore, with the exception of Cena and Orton, and maybe Sheamus this year, but we'll see.
You can also go long term, and Brock Lesnar wins a title this year. Rock wins the title from him at WrestleMania 2013. And then at SummerSlam, John Cena gets his win back, wins the title from The Rock, and that's the end of the story. Back in just a moment, Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here on this beautiful Easter Sunday. Sports Byline, USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94, XM Radio, Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. And for the latest news and information in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, you can always head to our website, WrestlingObserver.com. It is a place to go for wrestling audio. If you love this show, you are missing out if you are not a subscriber at WrestlingObserver.com. It's only $10.99 per month. For that fee, you get brand new radio shows virtually every single day. In fact, some days, such as this past Thursday, I do anywhere from 3 to 4 brand new shows in a single day. Anywhere from 10 to 15 brand new radio shows every single week. Both myself, Dave Meltzer, Mike Sempervivi here, along with Adam Summers. We have so many shows, different shows, available on the website every single week. Pro wrestling, mixed martial arts, the history of wrestling, the history of MMA. List goes on and on. If you go to WrestlingObserver.com right now, scroll down the right-hand side of the page, a listing of our latest 3 absolutely, positively free radio shows. They're MP3s. Download them. Listen to them. And if you like what you hear, sign up, and not only will you get brand new shows every single day, including later on tonight, myself and Dave Meltzer talking all the news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as well as tomorrow night after Raw, not only will you get all of these brand new shows, but our full archive, dating back to 2005, every show that we have ever done is available in our archives. Tens of thousands of hours of audio, interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, all available for you at WrestlingObserver.com. So head up there and check that out. And Mike, before we continue, any final thoughts on the potential lineup, top matches for next year's WrestleMania?
Oh, man. I'm going to go, even though all these matches can make sense in a way, I'm going to go with Rock and Undertaker on top. Hopefully they can build Cena back up to a point where people take him seriously against Brock. Brock's last appearance in Madison Square Garden, for people who don't remember, was against Goldberg with Steve Austin as the special referee, looking like the cat who ate the canary as people were booing both Lesnar and Goldberg completely out of the building. So I would do Brock Cena with a serious Cena if you're actually going to change him up and make give everybody a reason that everybody wants to see him face off against Brock. And then Austin Punk, I think, would make the most sense there.
A couple of weeks ago, all of the individuals that are...
And you know what? While you're at it, give me Jericho and Danielson, just for the hell of it.
That would be a heck of a match. In fact, that was Daniel Bryan's first TV match for WWE, and it was awesome.
Yeah, on NXT, where he went... I mean, and again, talk about showing something there as a shining light and standing out.
A couple weeks ago, all of the fighters scheduled for May's UFC all-heavyweight show were at a press conference. And among them was Alistair Overeem, who was, in fact, the last man to beat Brock Lesnar in the UFC. And they were all given supposedly surprise, out-of-competition drug tests. Alistair Overeem knew that he was going to have at least two drug tests, two surprise drug tests, between now and his fight in May. He managed to fail his drug test, a TE ratio of 14 to 1. Very high. He is now out of that fight, it appears. And Mike, are you surprised?
No. No, really. And again, I've been able to watch Overeem for a long time now. Back to his K1 days, pure kickboxing days. And look, I know people's bodies change and all that stuff, but this, you know, he looked like, again, Alistair Overeem gives you the impression that maybe something has been changing with his body. And again, these tests are all IQ tests, but until a guy gets popped, I mean, the arrogance that goes along with this, I mean, for him to have that kind of ratio this close with a press conference going on, knowing you're going to be randomly tested and you hadn't been yet, that's just pure arrogance. And I'm not surprised by it whatsoever. It's too bad. And I'm not saying that I would do this if I was the commissioner or anything like that, but because he had it was not a full license when he fought Brock Lesnar, I don't believe. If I'm in Brock's camp, just for the hell of it, I do lobby Nevada to actually get that thing overturned. You might as well. Why not? Well, all they can do is say no.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly how that works. It was a conditional license that he had in the Brock Lesnar fight. We shall see what happens. I am under the impression that Overeem's camp is confident for some reason. I don't know why, but confident. And that's pretty much all I know about it. But what that means, we'll see. But I can't imagine this thing being overturned and him fighting in May, particularly after the whole debacle around November when he was scheduled to get a drug test, and it was 27 days between the request and when he finally turned in his proper sample. But I don't know. Strange things have happened. I don't know if stranger things have happened. This would be pretty strange if he got off on this one here. But he's been very quiet up to this point. So later this month, they're scheduled to have a meeting to discuss the situation with the commission, and we shall see what comes of it. I wanted to make sure before our this segment here is wrapped up that I give you a chance to talk about Ring of Honor last night, since you went to a live event. Tell us about the show.
I did. For the next set of tapings coming up here, I went to the Dew Burns Arena in Baltimore, and my entire life that I lived somewhere between Baltimore and Washington, for the 20 years I was there, I'd never had a reason. I had a reason to go to Canton, which was to drink, but never had a reason to go to the Dew Burns Arena. But it is a nice little spot for them to have TV tapings. It's very intimate and you know, good parking, good area of the city. There is life around it, too. You know, it started at 7 o'clock with a dark match, went until about 11:30. I had to get out of there a little bit earlier because I had my son. But it flowed incredibly well. There was not a whole lot of downtime. There weren't issues. A lot of people that watch the iPay-per-views, they obviously have the issue with, you know, the intermission and how it comes across when you're sitting there. And, you know, it's important for the arena, but not for the people watching. But, you know, the intermission was not long here when they broke up the month of shows in 2 weeks. The matches were very, very good. And you know, seeing Rhino stands out a little bit now being with the House of Truth. Obviously, his size stands out amongst these guys. But Mike Mondo, in the match he had against TJ Perkins, who's done a lot of work in Japan and is, you know, growing in Ring of Honor, that was one of the best matches on there. It was really, really good. And again, the whole thing flowed well. The most of the matches, again, were very, very good, or you obviously knew where they were going because it is a TV show. You knew what they were setting up as things went along, and I can't say everybody was incredibly nice to me. Obviously, my son getting to hang out with Maria Kanellis and get a big hug did not hurt his feelings whatsoever. But, you know, from top to bottom, everybody was really nice. They got Baltimore was always a rabid fan base anyway. They started going to matches there in 1984. And obviously, pulling themselves out of Philadelphia had to be a tough thing, and they go back to New York and things like that. But Baltimore is a perfect crowd for them, and there are plenty of people that have been there for all four tapings. So you know, it's not, I'm not sure what Impact has turned into because I've never went to a taping, but I know how it comes across on TV. I don't think you're going to have that problem at Baltimore running once a month instead of doing it once a week with these shows. It's just, they are long, and even though they did their best job going through it, it is tough by the time you hit the main event of the fourth taping that you're not at least a little bit burned out by it. But they didn't overuse anybody. You know, they spot-used plenty of people. Roderick Strong, I think, got the most play as far as coming out over the four episodes. But everything was spotted out well. And again, guys like Mondo, who people maybe haven't seen before, you know, or don't remember from his WWE days, because he looks completely different. I mean, he really, really stood out.
Or some of the big storylines that they put together.
Obviously, the continuation of Roderick Strong and Davey. Jesus, yeah, I was going to say everybody else, but Davey Richards. But yeah, Davey Richards, which has been really, really good. Teasing problems, obviously, with Michael Elgin and Roderick Strong, which was very, very interesting. Brutal Bob Evans. Our friend Brutal Bob possibly getting into the mix here with it comes to Eddie Edwards after Edwards' match with Mike Bennett. So they've got that going on. Obviously, Mondo, who, again, he really gets people into things. But, you know, him, Cornette and Steen, obviously. This whole thing is leading into next month's iPay-per-view, Border Wars, when it comes to Steen against... again, I'm brain locking on Davey Richards. Poor Davey Richards. I feel sorry for him here, but him. And, oh, another good match: Roderick Strong and Adam Cole, which I think is going to be the main event for the second week of tapings that they did. That was a really good match as well. So that continuing on, and the hatred of the world's greatest tag team also continues.
So they basically have a month to figure out what they're going to do with iPay-per-view. A little over a month.
Well, you know, and it's really, I like the way that they've structured the show. Final Battle was awful in a lot of ways for me on a lot of levels, but at least they've got the structure of the pay-per-views as far as the match order, as far as flowing well, and I didn't get a chance to see this past weekend's, but the thing they really need to figure out are production issues, and there's just no reason in the world that a company that's owned by Sinclair Broadcasting, who owns all these TV stations, should continuously have these problems with the iPay-per-views. It's just absolutely ludicrous. And also, by the way, too, is a nice little interlude into things, and I think this may actually be on week four, Chikara Showcase, which they're actually going to help promote each other's shows, I know, here coming up soon. But you did get to see Lost Ice Creams and Ophidian against The Colony, which was an interesting break for people. Some people hated it, but obviously because of the style that they work and the comedy that they do, most people actually did get into it. But there were a few ROH diehards that were vocal about the fact that they didn't want this in their wrestling. And they also don't like 18-second chants, which was chanted at Vinny Marsiglia after he got laid out by Rhino. So that and yes, yes, yes chants that were being shouted down.
Los Ice Creams on an ROH show.
It, you know what? 31 flavors on my shows. I'll take it. It's got a spot. It obviously wouldn't be something I would be having in the main events or anything like that, especially with, you know, the stuff that they have and everything being based around a psychopath and Kevin Steen being the ROH fan choice. But, you know, as far as being on a show, I think it breaks it up well.
Yeah, they had one of those, they had a Chikara versus ROH match on the show. I think it was a Friday show on Mania Weekend, and people were fine with it, you know. Wasn't, I guess we didn't have the diehards who were just outraged at one of these Chikara matches was on their show, but, you know, it's a nice little interlude. It's always good to have different things in wrestling. I don't need to see the same match 18 times, so it's good to break it up with something different, so... There you go. That's the ROH report, and did anybody say anything about GoFightLive.tv when you were there? Did Jim Cornette cut a promo on anybody?
No, they, no. Although there were people there talking amongst themselves, since, you know, it was a lot of time, for a lot of them, it was the first time they've probably seen each other since the last set of tapings, a lot of just ripping it to absolute shreds. And, again, the problems, Dave Logano, when he was there, obviously, you know, there's, I don't know how it works with GoFightLive, but something has got to give with it, because it just crushes the show, and it's just painful. Although, one thing they do have going for them, Kevin Kelly and Nigel McGuinness, and I know Steve Corino was up there doing announcing with him at some points. I did catch a glimpse of him. I can't remember for what it was, but they are really a good team.
All right, everybody, we are going to head to a break here. When we come back, we're going to have Mike talk to us a little bit about the passing of Chief Jay Strongbow. You may have seen the videos on WWE television. He passed away last week. We'll talk to you a little bit about that. Coming up in just a moment here on this Easter Sunday, you're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here in the final segment of the show, Mike, very quickly, tell us a little bit about the life and times of the late Chief Jay Strongbow.
Yeah, Chief Jay Strongbow passed away, I think it was Tuesday at the age of 83, and for a lot of people know him as a longtime employee of WWE, and they see him, they catch him in those clips from the 70s and his team with Sheik Adnan Al-Casey, Billy White Wolf, is, you know, Jules Strongbow later on as well, and they go, okay, stereotypical Indian guy. And he was, but it was also, he was a great character and a great wrestler. A lot of people didn't know he was Joe Scarpa, as people in Florida and Georgia from way back in the day remember him. And in fact, on this Ringside Rap show, if you go to ringsiderap.com, we talked to the assassin, Jody Hamilton, about him a little bit. And they go back as far as, you know, the 40s, and he was a big star down there as Joe Scarpa, and then went up to New York and got this character under Vince McMahon Sr. and just became a massive star right underneath Bruno Sammartino, and ahead of Dominic DiNucci, where if you were going through to get to Bruno, you had to get through Chief Jay Strongbow, and he knew his gimmick, he knew how to work it, he knew how to work the fans, and he did a great job at it, and he became a road agent for them and a longtime employee for them for years and years after that. And again, it's when you look at the two sides of his career, and he's one of those guys too as well. He was such a big star in Georgia and Florida, and then he goes back down to work on WTBS. He goes back to Georgia as Chief Jay Strongbow. People didn't care. That's how good he was in his role, where even in those K-Fabulous times, it just didn't matter whatsoever. So passed away at 83. I'm not sure. I think they put it on SmackDown. I'm not sure if they're going to go ahead and put it on Raw or not to begin the episode, but he'd be one of the guys I would do it with.
All right, everybody, we are going to wrap it up for today, but later on tonight, myself and Dave Meltzer back with a brand new show. We'll be talking all the news from the weekend in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We'll preview Raw tomorrow night. And then, of course, tomorrow night after Raw, we'll be back with a brand new show as well. So check out all of our shows over at WrestlingObserver.com. Mike and I are going to be back next week with a brand new show talking all of the news, so make sure you check that out. And that is it from here. Thanks, Mike. Thanks, of course, everybody, for listening. Thanks all the folks at Sports Byline USA. Talk to you again next week. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.